I'd like to call to order the meeting of the House Oil and Gas Committee. It is, I have about 12:33, excuse me. And since this is not a hearing, I mean, this is not a bill, we're just going to take information. We really don't require a quorum. We have one, at any rate. Today, we're going to hear from Kyle Parker and Raga Elam of the governor's office about the consequences of Judge Charles Cranston's stay of the lease sale 78. As I understand the issues, that there were several environmental, fishing, and other interests that sued Harry Noah for impermissibly lack of consideration of various things like conflicts between oil and gas and the fisheries, subsistence use, environmental degradation, water-dependent, water-related issues, and that the judge found that the commissioner, in fact, did have a best interest finding, which was one of the issues. The judge then denied the stay of that, the best interest finding, but citing 6 AAC 80.040A, the judge cited that the Alaska Coastal Policy Council's administration of the Alaska Coastal Management Program must consider the following in preferential order: water-dependent activities, water-related activities, and then which are those activities which are neither but could not be performed from an inland location. And including that, there were three other criteria, one of which was that all reasonable and prudent steps have been taken to safeguard, and that there was a significant, no showing of a significant public need. When I heard this rendering, of course, it upset me, and apparently it upset the governor, and I'm glad to see that Raga is here to give us an overview of what the governor's office is doing in response to this. And then I would like to ask Kyle Parker to give us an official position from a legal standpoint of what maybe a precedent may establish from this, what may happen with all the efforts that this committee will be trying to do to further the development of our resources, and then to have judicial renderings such as we've had on lease sale 78. And prior to that, we've had, for different reasons, but we had a problem with two sales in the Beaufort Sea, sale 50 and sale 55, and we've had reasons for not granting these or not allowing these sales to go forward, from transportation of crude to caribou relief, and now this one that we have not been able to show, the state has not been able to show in their leasing, that we did consider that these were water-dependent, water-related type activities. And so, without further ado, Raga, if I could ask you to come up and identify yourself.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name's Raga Elam. I'm with the governor's office. I just wanted to say a few introductory remarks, and then I'll defer to both Kyle and I hope Barbara Fulmer and Jim Eason in our Anchorage office are online to also answer your questions. Barbara is an assistant attorney general who's been working on this case, and Jim Eason's the director of the Division of Oil and Gas, so they can speak in more specificity for you.
Thank you, Rog. I failed to mention that we are on teleconference, and we have Anchorage online and the Soldotna and Kenai area online. Thank you.
But I did want to take this opportunity to express the administration's concern, just as you've described, Mr. Chairman, that we all have about the how this opinion may jeopardize our leasing program. And as a result, the governor, on Tuesday, in response to the opinion, asked Shelby Stasny, the director of our Office of Management and Budget, to convene a group to look at this in a very quick fashion. Regret that he couldn't be here with you today. He's up in Anchorage in light of the other court opinion yesterday regarding the Constitutional Budget Reserve, so he's wrestling with that. But immediately after the governor's assignment to Shelby, he convened a cabinet-level discussion involving the Division of Governmental Coordination, which is in Office of Management and Budget, and then DEC, Fish and Game, DNR, and Commerce, the commissioners, got together on Tuesday to just try to scratch our heads as to what to do. We have a very tight time frame to try to deal with this, and we want to work with the legislature on a fix. But at this juncture, we don't have a solution for you, and I apologize for that, but I wanted to make sure that you understood that we were working diligently on this. Our time frame, as Shelby expressed midweek, was a week or two, that we wanted to then start coming to the legislature with ideas, and then we can collectively figure out how to proceed. But in Shelby's absence, I wanted to take this opportunity to let you know that he's working hard on it, and the administration's very concerned about this. And then I'll defer to Kyle, Barbara, and Jim to answer any questions about the chronology and how they view the impact on the leasing program.
Thank you very much, Raga. And if you would come forward and identify yourself, we are absolutely not going to try and push you into a corner to give us the stepwise procedure. But the mere fact that the governor's office is so actively aggressive on this, I'm really impressed. And if you could just kind of give us an overview from a legal standpoint, because I'm looking at it from an emotional standpoint and from a technical standpoint, but I think, and we'll get more to that from the Director of Oil and Gas in Anchorage, but if you could give us what the consequences may be legally.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Excuse me, just one moment, Kyle, before you start. Anchorage, can you hear us?
Yes, we can.
And what about Soldat and Kenai?
Yes, we can hear you.
Good, thank you. I'm sorry, go ahead,
no
Kyle.
Problem. I think that Judge Cranston's decision of earlier this week, it's indicative of a pattern that's been developing since the Supreme Court's initial decision in Sale 50 back in 1987, and that was specifically regarding and addressing the Title 38 best interest finding requirements. Since that time, the Supreme Court has we've had two opinions in oil and gas lease Sale 50, both remanding to DNR for additional findings on the best interest finding and the coastal consistency determination. Most recently, we had a decision in oil and gas lease Sale 55, which is another Beaufort Sea sale, where they remanded to DNR for additional findings in regards to the best interest finding. And then even in earlier this year, we had another decision in a mining case, Kutsarik Corp v. State, which is out in Good News Bay, and the Supreme Court remanded again for additional findings in regards to the best interest finding. Judge Cranston's recent decision is just a continuation of that trend of losses for the state. And I know Commissioner Noah and the other resource agencies are taking these decisions into consideration as they look to solutions to solve this, not only in the oil and gas, but as far as timber and mining as well. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have this morning.
Before we take those questions, Representative Navarre, would you like to join us at the table? And Representative Phillips? I haven't mentioned to our online people who actually is here. We have Representative Gary Davis and Gail Phillips, Mike Navarre from Homer and Soldat and Kenai area.
Way in the back.
Okay. Senator Little, would you like to join us at the table?
Actually, I'll just sit back here and eat my lunch.
That's quite all right. And we have Representative Sanders Cott, myself from the Anchorage Eagle River area, and we have Representative Joe Sitton from Fairbanks. So if any of you out on teleconference want to ask any of them specific questions, or if they in turn want to ask Kyle any specific questions.
Gary?
Do you have a question?
He's here.
I mentioned him.
You mentioned. But I also have a question, too.
Yes, Gary.
I thought he said Jerry.
I didn't hear him say.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kyle, I didn't get your last name. I'm sorry.
My last name is Parker.
Parker. You mentioned it appears that the courts are taking a stance towards certain directions and have since 87. You indicated that in 87, best interest findings were being scrutinized, and also coastal management plans, or you mentioned coastal management in there. And it's my understanding that this case, the basis for the stay was based on coastal management plans.
That is correct.
It assumed that you should have recognized that that was an issue, and what were you? Did you present your defense related to the coastal management plans?
Well, now we will have maybe that question might be better directed to Jim Eason in Anchorage. I know that they have taken the same safeguards and precautions on this lease sale that they've done on many, many other lease sales, and it's just that, as Kyle pointed out, it seems as if the courts are finding different little problems that creep up, even though many prior lease sales have been held. Jim, are you available?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, in response to that question, I'm afraid I didn't get the name of the person who posed the question.
Representative Davis. Thank you. Representative Navarre?
I guess for Kyle or for Jim, have we just run into a rash of anti-development judges with these cases? Or, I mean, is that your interpretation? It seems like from the governor's press release that he feels that this particular judge is not exercising his responsibility as a judge, and that he needs to understand what the judicial system's role is when it comes to developing our resources. Is that their responsibility, or would you say it's interpreting the laws and responsibilities that the department has under the law?
I believe what our feeling is that the courts have been eroding the discretion, both in regards to the best interest finding and the coastal consistency determinations, that the legislature intended the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources in regards to the best interest findings, and then for the coastal consistency determinations, the different coordinating agencies that issue the coastal consistency determinations, that the legislature intended those people to have. The courts are not recognizing that was the intent, and we can look back in the legislative history and see where in transmittal letters and whatnot, where the legislature did intend to vest with the directors and the commissioners in the administrative agencies the discretion to determine what was in the, or what is in the best interest of the state and whether a particular project is consistent with the Alaska Coastal Management Plan.
Representative Rivera.
And was that part of your argument in court?
That has been a part of our argument before the Supreme Court and the Superior Court in each oil and gas lease sale that we have taken to them, yes.
And, in fact, you've lost.
We have lost.
And
we believe that.
And have we seen in the past legislation, I know we saw some on the Camden Bay sale, have we seen legislation introduced to clarify the statutes with respect to what exactly the legislative intent is? Because I don't mind clarifying the statutes. In fact, I think that we definitely need to do that. But I also think that I'm just a little ticked off because I know this particular judge and I know that he's very well respected in the legal community. And I just took exception to the remarks of the governor in this particular case. I also think that with respect to what is required of the department, there were mistakes made by the department that actually led to a number of the parties joining in the lawsuit, which served to load on to this case a number of people in opposition that I think wouldn't have been there had additional steps been taken by the department to maybe accommodate some of their concerns or at least spend a little bit more time in discussion with them.
Let me address the press release and your feelings about what it says towards Judge Cranston. I don't believe that there was any intent to direct any pointed spears at him. I think what we're looking to is the courts not recognizing the discretion, as I said. And your question as to whether there's been legislation introduced, not since the initial sale 50 decision came down and the legislature did amend Title 38 to add 3805-035G, have we had any legislation. Unfortunately, the legislation apparently did not go far enough. The courts are still left wondering who has the discretion to make these decisions. And as Jim Eason stated, the courts have been substituting their judgment for that of the agencies.
Mr. Chairman, just one final comment with respect to the department in this instance, and that is that while I agree with Mr. Eason's assessment that you can't possibly know everything that will take place in a lease sale, I think that you can know some things that you would not specifically allow with respect to those lease sales and the development of those lease sales. And some of those could have been articulated a little bit better. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And for what it's worth, from a non-legal standpoint, from a technical standpoint, having worked in DNR prior to working in industry up here and subsequently coming to the legislature, I know that there are discretions that are exercised by the Department of Natural Resources quite often to the chagrin of the applicants because they seem somewhat oppressive and overbearing in respect to things that have happened in the past. And I think we'll never be able, in my opinion, we'll never be able to legislate specifics of what has to be or has not to be done in a lease sale. That's going to have to stay at the discretion of the department.
Mr. Chairman, if yes. I could comment, I agree with you wholeheartedly. That's where the expertise is. Legislature should be no more involved with that than we are. We should be in this allocation. I don't disagree with that either. And in fact, I think that the department does, in general, a pretty darn good job. I think we've got some good people within the department. But in certain cases, while you can't know everything that might be done in production of leases, you also don't know everything that will be asked to be done. And so you set yourselves up on both ends. You end up with a lawsuit on the front end, and then on the other end, when you try to do it after the leases are sold, they have a right to get to the lease and to develop it in a certain fashion. So you set yourself up on the other end when you try to put in the restrictions where you end up with a lawsuit from the people who bought the leases. So that's, I mean, we have to recognize that also on the front end.
That's a good point. Yes, Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kyle, in your opinion, do these rulings that we've had since 1987, do they in any way indicate a relaxed attitude on the part of the department in regards to preparation for these lease sales?
I don't believe that they do at all. I think it's the exact opposite. Since the sale 50 decision, the time it takes and the resources dedicated towards creating these best interest findings as well as doing the coastal consistency determinations has expanded, and I think that particularly the Division of Oil and Gas and the staff, the 035 staff they call them, they have a staff of people dedicated towards continually working on these best interest findings. The Department of Law since the 1987 decision has been working closely with the division prior to issuing these things, and I believe that they are doing more now than they ever have. I think Jim Eason could probably speak even more to that.
Perhaps Mr. Easton could help.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Sanders, I think from my perspective, I believe that we are doing an incredible and good job, but I think that maybe if you look at the decision a bit more closely than Judge Preston's case, you'll see the problem that we are running up against. In that particular decision, the judge looked at whether he thought the plaintiffs would ultimately prevail in their challenge to our best interest finding, and he agreed that they would not. In other words, indicates that he believes that ultimately the best interest finding for that sale will be upheld by the courts. So he could not find a reason to allow an injunction in that case. But then he turned to the issue of whether or not our consistency determination was likely to sustain the challenge. And as a matter of law, we believe, the Department of Law, I think, can speak to it directly, that the issue of whether or not the plaintiffs even had a right to raise the consistency determination was one that they had lost. They had 30 days to challenge the consistency determination beyond the time it was issued as a conclusive determination, and they failed to do that. As I recall, it was about 15 days or so beyond the deadline that they appealed the best interest finding, which was issued after the consistency determination. And technically, as a matter of law, I believe, and of course the attorney should speak to it as well, that the court should not have allowed them to raise the issue. But it nevertheless did. And more troubling, then, the court based its decision that an injunction would be proper on arguments that weren't raised by the plaintiffs in their brief or in their own arguments. So we essentially found ourselves in a court where the judge allowed someone to approach an appeal, which technically they should not have been allowed to do because it was time-barred, then constructed the arguments, which weren't their arguments, which he believed should grant an injunction. And against those kinds of odds, I simply don't know how we can defend.
Kyle, from a legal standpoint, is what Mr. Easton just said, is that your understanding?
That is correct. He has articulated very well the situation that we faced with Sale 78.
That does pose a very serious threat.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Representative Navarre?
I believe, and I couldn't find it when I was flipping through here, but didn't the judge rule on that? I mean, you said that they didn't appeal in time, and what the plaintiffs said were that the coastal management finding was part of the best interest finding and couldn't be separated, and so the appeal was, isn't that what he said? I mean, he did rule on that specific point.
Judge Cranston did rule on that point. The Department of Law feels that he was wrong, and that is one of our points on appeal that we plan to take to the Supreme Court. We do believe that he was incorrect in that ruling.
Senator Little.
Thank you very much. In speaking with Mr. Eason a couple of days ago, I asked, in the governor's press release, it says that changes have been directed regarding the coastal management planning process in order to rectify this problem situation. I was wondering, Mr. Eason didn't know, as it was just the day after the finding by the court, didn't know what direction the department would be headed in. I was just wondering if you had that information at this point.
I'll take that one.
Raga?
Chairman, Senator Little, I spoke earlier just briefly on that point. We've convened a cabinet-level group that's looking at it. Shelby Stasny in the Office of Management and Budget is chairing that. He regrets he couldn't be here today. He's responding to the other court case that came out yesterday. But our time frame is very tight in recognition of the fact that to the extent that it requires legislative fix, we're going to need to work with you. You have a full plate, but we think this will warrant your attention, and we want to get it to you as soon as we can. I'm thinking a week or two is what we're working with.
Well, I'm very concerned, having administered a coastal management plan, I see the value of the coastal program, coastal zone management program, and was very frustrated both at the borough level, seeing the lack of detail coming out of the borough in their consistency determination, and then also seeing the state depending on the local entities' consistency determination as support for their consistency determination. And I would really hate to see the coastal management planning process gutted to make development happen more easily. I think that the coastal management planning process, if done well, is one that works well. It identifies, while it will never identify all of the conceivable problem areas, it's impossible to do that, you're right. But I believe that it can identify some areas that absolutely everybody can agree on probably shouldn't be in a lease sale. And to that extent, I don't think it was followed. I tend to agree with the judge on that point, that if the coastal management planning process had been done thoroughly, I believe that the findings from the court may have been different. We'll never know, but it's just a concern of mine that the process not be gutted, because I believe that it does serve a good purpose.
Thanks, Senator Little. Are there any other questions from the members of the committee or people at the table? Are there any questions from either of our LIO offices? Kenai Soldatna? Are you there?
I don't have any questions here.
Okay, what about Anchorage? Anchorage, are you there? Okay.
The Anchorage LIO doesn't have any questions at this time.
Thank you. Representative Sanders.
Mr. Chairman, in the beginning of someone's testimony, I don't remember, they said there were three basic reasons why this was overthrown or put off. And I only heard the first one. Did I miss the other two? Or
I noted that as well. That was Jim Eason.
I'd like to hear the other two if I could.
Matter of fact, that's incorrect. There was considerably more in the record that dealt with.
much.
But the state has not demonstrated that there was a significant public benefit from offshore oil and gas leases. Those two coupled with the determination that in order to be consistent with the plan, we have to know what's going to happen later, ensure that mitigating measures we select are appropriate. Those are the three bases for the decision.
Thank you.
Representative Cott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess, Jim, this would be for you, Mr. Representative Cott. If this particular decision is upheld at the Supreme Court level, can you suggest what the effect of that decision would be on our state's leasing program?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Cott, I'm speaking now on my behalf. The commissioner may or may not have a different view. I really don't know. But we have, as Kyle mentioned when he started, two separate lines, I believe, of decisions that have come on one of these issues, the one dealing with whether or not you need to know what will happen in the development stage before you can be sure that your consistency determination is correct. The Supreme Court decision from, I believe, from Good News Bay as well as 1255, correct me if I'm wrong, Kyle, but as I recall, the 1255 decision presumes that you need to know what is going to happen in order to make your best interest finding. Now, we find ourselves in a strange position right now because Judge Cranston essentially rejected the Superior Court judge last week, seems to have rejected the Supreme Court's recent declaration that best interest findings also must be based on a more perfect knowledge of future events. That can't possibly be. And then Judge Cranston said, again, contrary to what the Supreme Court has said, that that's not the case, but it is the case on the consistency determination side. So we have the two documents that are absolutely necessary to support the decision or the best interest finding and the consistency determination if you're in the coastal zone. So my belief is that the law right now is that we cannot, since we cannot predict the future, we cannot draft either of those documents that will pass the Supreme Court, possibly the Superior Court's approval. And if that's correct, that means we cannot hold a lease sale that will survive a legal challenge, presuming anyone wants to challenge it.
Thank you.
Representative Navarre.
Yeah, and in a lot of these cases, we're unfortunately always probably going to have someone who's going to try to challenge it. What is the status now of the appeal? How soon will they take it up, and what does it do specifically to lease sale 78 and the timeline that it's on?
Kyle, do you have an answer there?
The Department of Law is planning to file an appeal of Judge Cranston's decision in the Supreme Court. Actually, it's called a petition for review. And I believe they're going to do that today. Is that correct, Barbara?
That's correct.
So the Department of Law will be filing that document today. There is no timeline for the Supreme Court. In a part of our petition, we've asked that they do make their decision quickly. We've asked for expedited review of our petition so we can better understand what's going to happen with Lease Sale 78. Because the division must hold the lease sale within 90 days of the quarter in which it was scheduled, the drop-dead date for the lease sale is June 29th. If Judge Cranston's decision to stay the lease sale that still has not been straightened out by that date, the lease sale will have to go back on the five-year plan.
To that end, is it my understanding that DNR received a fairly significant number of bids, and that they're holding these until that June 29th drop-dead date?
Jim can speak to this a little further, but yes, that is the case. Jim, would you like to tell them what arrangements have been made to hold those bids?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the morning of the sale, we announced that the bidders had two options. They could either pick up their bids. All the bids, first of all, were unopened, and we announced before, without opening, all the bidders were free to pick up their bids, or alternatively, to leave their bids sealed in our custody until the judge, we announced that we would be appealing to the Supreme Court, but we had no certainty whether the Supreme Court would even consider
My purpose for saying that is that procedurally, then the state would be ready to continue up till the 29th.
That's
if we
correct.
Get the favorable ruling from the judge. Okay. Representative Navarre?
Yeah, and then Kyle or Barbara, what's the likelihood of the Supreme Court taking it up on an expedited basis with the June 29th date? I mean,
I wouldn't even presume to guess at when they'll...
Because, Mr. Chairman, that's one of the concerns that I have. And I don't know, I'm sure it'll be part of your consideration as you look at what happens in the statutes or what statutory changes should be made, and I'm sure we're going to have extensive debate on that when that comes up. But one of the concerns I have is that, you know, it happens on the last day before the lease sale. That's when the injunction is ordered, and it throws it into a legal system, which is not a very expeditious system for the most part. And so the net result is that it delays the whole lease process for a significant period of time. And, mm-hmm. and I don't think that's in our interest, and that might be something that we want to look at, particularly with regard to the statutory 90-day timeline.
What I've been told is that should this go to the 30th, that we go back to ground zero, and it will be at least 2 years, maybe more, before this can come back up again, which is... To me, that's a real...
But, Mr. Chairman, let me just say, Representative Navarre, we share your concern. Glad to know that you have it as well. Last year, when we were faced with this situation with respect to the Camden Bay lease sale, that was one of the statutory fixes that we floated out there, was the dropping that 90-day drop-dead date off of off Title 38. You can be sure that, at the very least, will be part of what we'll be coming back to you with also.
So we'll have a debate on that too.
Any other comments from any of the people here? Anybody in the audience that would like to testify or ask questions of our experts here? Or okay,
could I make one comment, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, you may.
Representative Jerry Sanders, I don't mean this in any way to encourage the oil companies involved to do anything like this, but I mean, I guess, more as a warning to people who encourage these kind of actions. If I were an oil company in Alaska today and I had all my money in a computer the way they do, I would have it transferred and I wouldn't be available to bid this when it comes up.
It's ironic that you'd say that, because as a member of the Federal Energy Council of States, we have been informed on several fronts, and more particularly recently, that Latin America is ready, willing, and able for investment dollars, and it's not in a risks mode. It's a guarantee, essentially, that they need big bucks to process gas that's already and available right now, and that's only one of several areas in the world that is looking for this kind of capital. So you make a very good point, Representative, that industry may start to cast their eyes other places. I'm sorry. Senator Little.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to clarify, or did you say that there might be some legislation coming forward in the next couple of weeks? Was that
yes.
what I understood you said?
That, Mr. Chairman, Senator Little, that's what we're working on at the moment. The resource agencies have gathered once, and we'll be getting together again when Shelby gets back to try to craft some possible legislation that we would work with the legislature on.
I would like to be involved in that process. If you could inform me of those meetings, I'd really appreciate it.
Yeah, at this juncture, it's a little early, and we've asked the agencies to roll up their sleeves and work on it, but the feeling is then once we have a sense of what we want to do, that we would be coming to the legislature, not with a bill even, but with let's start talking about where to go from there.
Thank you.
And with your indulgence, members of the Oil and Gas Committee, I have volunteered our services whenever and however we might be helpful.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative Sitton.
I just have to give Mr. Chairman a friendly reminder to our friends, the oil companies, that while Latin America might be peeling, they should also remember that the state in Latin America frequently seizes the property of oil companies and other companies. We should put that into the equation as well.
Yes, as a matter of fact, what they're doing is decentralizing toward that end,
yeah.
Privatizing. Representative Navarre?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I would hope that the oil companies will bid when the lease sale become available. The Cook Inlet area was where oil was first developed in the state. We have had a long-standing cooperative working relationship between industry, the oil industry, and fishing interest. And I've worked in the oil industry. I've also been a commercial fisherman, and I'm still a sport fisherman. And I think that what needs to happen is there needs to attempt to be more cooperation. Everybody, I think, on this committee and in this state recognized the value of the oil industry to Alaska, and I think that the oil industry has also recognized the value of Alaska to the oil industry. And I think that we need to encourage development, encourage further development. Hopefully we can do that with some changes in the law, but also protections that need to remain in the law and be written in also.
That's very well put, and lest anybody not be aware that the discovery at Swanson River was one of the major issues in whether or not we became a state, because that issued in the era that we would then be able to pay our own bills. And so we do owe our livelihood to the oil industry. Any other comments? If not, dismiss that.